Welcome to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast, where SearchHealthIT.com editors interview leading experts on IT strategies for healthcare leaders.
Hi, this is Brian Eastwood, the site editor for SearchHealthIT.com. I'm joined today by Eric Siebert, a VMware V expert, blogger, book author, and frequent contributor to TechTarget. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Sure, Brian. Glad to be here.
Okay, Eric will be giving us some tips for managing storage in a virtual server environment. What is it about managing data in a virtual server environment that's more challenging than the more traditional kind of server environment?
So a virtual environment is completely unlike, you know, a traditional environment. I like using the analogy is that, you know, when you're going into virtualization, you're not in Kansas anymore. Everything's different. It affects everything. The data center, kind of the focal point there is, you know, virtual machines in a virtual environment really all competing for shared resources. You don't have your own resources. You're sharing resources. And storage is really the focal point of that. It's typically a remote resource. It's shared by all the hosts in the environment. And a lot of the compute resources are all local to the host, but your storage resources are typically shared by a large number of hosts, and you have a many-to-one relationship. It's also a dynamic environment. Your virtual machines are always on the move. They're moving from host to host, from data store to data store. There's a lot of unpredictable I/O patterns, you know, random I/O that stresses disk performance. There's longer paths to storage resources, which can cause bottlenecks to occur. And, you know, you're essentially with virtualization, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. So, you know, you better have a really good basket, and storage is really the foundation there. So it really needs to be highly available, highly efficient, and really high performing.
Now, one of the keys to managing the such a storage environment is to be keenly aware of the storage workloads that your virtual machines have. Could you elaborate a little bit on why this is such an important consideration?
Sure. You know, storage arrays have really limited IOPS in that, you know, it's really based off the configuration of that storage array. And when you have a lot of virtual machines all competing for those limited IOPS, really have to understand what the workloads are of those virtual machines so you can really, you know, properly size that array. You know, because if you don't know what the workloads are, how can you really properly size your array? And if you don't properly size your array, you're going to run into bottlenecks, you're going to run into performance problems, and, you know, your virtual environment is really, the performance overall is really going to suffer. So you really need to measure and understand both your average and peak workloads. And particularly the peak one is one that you really have to be aware of, because if you try sizing for average, once you do experience those peaks, it's really going to be a big performance hit on your environment and really slow things down a lot. So you also need to be aware of, you know, things like if you're sizing for a virtual desktop environment versus a virtual server environment. Those are two very different workloads in a virtualized environment. So you typically want to do different types of requirement gatherings in those areas and that to really, you know, properly size specific to whatever that workload is. If you don't do this, you know, you're going to get bottlenecks. VMs are really moving around a lot with a lot of the technologies that will move VMs, you know, around in the virtual environment. And if you have too many VMs accumulating on a host or too many VMs on a particular LAN, it'll create the bottleneck. So what it really comes down to is that, you know, old adage you hear with woodworking is measure twice, cut once. You really need to measure twice, make sure you understand your storage workloads, because if you don't, you're going to have to go back and fix something, and that can get really expensive with storage, where you either have to rip and replace or, fix whatever is causing you not to be able to get the performance you need to support your workloads.
It's certainly understandable. I know earlier you'd mentioned the importance of monitoring I/O. What is the benefit of avoiding an intense disk input-output when you're working in this type of environment?
So the intense disk I/O that, you know, may happen at peak times, if your array can't handle that, you're really going to be in trouble, because your virtual machines are really going to slow to a crawl during peak periods. With things like VDI, this can be caused by time-specific events, like everybody gets in the morning, you hear the term boot storms associated with VDI. So because of that, you have a peak workload happening at a specific time, and, you know, because of that, you're going to have a very increased workload during that time period, which if your array can't handle that, you're really going to be in trouble. You can use things like artificial acceleration devices to handle, to do things to really accommodate those peak loads. And these are things that will have typically caching or SSD tiering and that will be able to handle the peaks when they do occur. these workloads can this intense disk I/O can also be caused by things like scheduled events. You know, so not just specifically time-specific events, but scheduled events like as well. You know, things like backups and antivirus scanning and patching that we have to do periodically. And you know, really to kind of combat that, you can use things like randomization or staggering your schedules. So you don't want to, you know, do everything at once. You know, maybe schedule your backups over a period of time, or your AV scanning and your patching, so it's, you know, you don't get run into that intense disk I/O. You can also use optimized tools, you know, using tools that are optimized for a virtual environment. They understand the virtual environment and, you know, can cause less stress on the environment when they run.
Okay, I think you addressed quite a bit of what I was thinking for my next question, but are there any other ways that you can try to avoid unnecessary I/O operations, you know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned scheduling, and are there any other methods for doing this?
Yeah, you know, because we are in a shared resource environment, you know, you really have to think, you know, we're sharing resources now, so it's not like a traditional environment where it's okay if you have too much I/O, because it really only affects that certain host and not everything else in the environment. You know, the resources are siloed in a traditional environment, in a virtual environment, they're all shared. So doing even the small things like disabling any Windows services that you don't need, uninstalling unnecessary applications, disabling file indexing, limiting the amount of logging that you're doing, can really make a big difference in that when you cross that across a larger scale in that. There's a lot of small things that can be tweaked, and you typically won't do these in a lot of the traditional environments because, you know, you don't really care if you save 5 IOPS here or 10 IOPS here and that. But doing these, you know, they really add up in a virtual environment because it scales larger. You know, if you have 500 VMs and you're saving 5 IOPS per VM, well, that's 2,500 IOPS saved. So it may seem small at a per VM level, but at an overall level, you're really saving a lot of IOPS and really reducing the amount of I/O that you have on your environment. You can also use endpoint management tools or Active Directory group policy to help manage and control the configurations and that. So, you know, rather than having to do this on every single VM, you can do it, you know, centrally and globally in that. And, you know, you not only reduce your virtual machine disk I/O, but you also reduce consumption of other host resources. And reducing the amount of unnecessary disk I/O that VMs generate is really just a smart move. It really allows you to get your storage subsystem to operate at maximum efficiency.
Okay, that provides a nice segue into the next question that I had, which was, what are some of the ways you can limit the amount of space that your VMs are taking up on storage devices? Again, it's sort of building on some of what you had talked about in your previous answer.
Yeah, you know, typically when people virtualize, they bring those old, bad, traditional server habits and mindsets over into their virtualized environments and that. You know, they'll size things without any regard to, you know, the amount of disk space that they're using and that. So when you're in a virtual environment, you really have to look at your requirements and size accordingly. And that, you know, don't really give those virtual machines more resources than they need. You know, be stingy with those resources. You know, you can always expand later if you have to add more. That's the beauty of virtualization, where, you know, you can easily on the fly, you know, add more disk space to a virtual machine. But, you know, giving that virtual machine too much up front, you know, can really just, you know, waste a lot of disk space. So you want to really be careful and be smart about how you're doing your sizing. For virtual desktops or lab server type environments, using things like link clones can save a great deal of disk space because you have a centralized master clone that's the basis for all your virtual machines, and you don't have a full VM disk for every single virtual desktop that you have out there. And thin provisioning is another good one where you can also help manage storage space in virtual environments. You know, if you use thin provisioning, you can over-provision in that. If somebody wants 100 gig, well, you can give them that 100 gig, even though, you know, they're maybe only use 50 of it. But you're not actually allocating that space in that within provisioning. So that's a big space saver in virtual environments. You know, almost all VMs are typically given more disk space than they need, and thin provisioning is a big win there. You can also implement thin provisioning at both the virtualization layer or the storage layer or both. And a lot of, you know, VMware's had the thin provisioning built in for quite a while. Almost all storage arrays today also have that there as well. You know, typically, you can, you know, doing it at the storage array layer is a bit more efficient than that because, you know, it's the one that's managing the space. So I'd recommend doing it there if you have both. But definitely a key technology to use to be able to limit your space.
Okay, those are all great points. One last question, and it's kind of a very open-ended one. How do you identify the right storage for your particular workloads? What sort of the best practices you can recommend for going through that process?
Yeah, that's always a tough one because there's there's always for every person there's a different answer on that, and it really depends on the requirements for that person. There's a lot of decisions you have to make when you implement storage in a virtual environment. Are you going to use local storage? Are you going to use shared storage? You know, what types of drives am I going to use? Fast SATA SSD, 10K, 15K. Beyond that, you have, what type of protocol am I going to use? Am I going to use a NAS, iSCSI fiber channel? What speed? Am I going to use auto tiering? So, yeah, I find that, cost is often a big factor when choosing storage and really dictates the choices in that. If you have a certain budget, you can only afford this much, a lot of times that will eliminate some of the technologies that maybe I can't afford, really expensive fiber channel SAN, maybe something more of a NAS or iSCSI device is more appropriate than that. Your existing infrastructure often plays a big factor. So if I already do have a fiber channel SAN in my environment, I have that whole infrastructure there already. I don't have to go out and buy it from scratch. So, I could leverage that already. So it's not going to be as expensive for me to maybe expand my fiber channel environment to support my virtual environment. From a performance perspective, you can pretty much these days get equal performance across any of the different storage devices, whether it's fiber channel, iSCSI, or NAS, because of the advancements and a lot of the speeds in that, with 10 gig Ethernet, it's a pretty level playing field there. You see comparisons against iSCSI and NAS a lot. They have different characteristics, from a protocol perspective, but from a performance perspective, they're pretty equal in performance. So, really it comes down to, what you're comfortable with, what you have experience with, and what's really going to meet your requirements. You could use also things like auto or manual tiering to allow you to use cheaper storage tiers. So if I can't afford, all SAS disk, maybe I implement a layer of SATA and using either auto tiering to automatically move my data or manual tiering to position my data where I know it needs to be on a certain level of performance characteristics of a storage, I can do that. So, storage is really not a one-size-fits-all. Each environment is unique. At the end of the day, whatever you choose really must have the required IOPS to handle, what your workloads are going to be.
Okay, so there's definitely quite a bit of thought that will have to go into that process if you're going to do it effectively.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us today, Eric. Was there anything, any additional points that you wanted to make for our audience?
Just one that, storage, I see it as, a lot of people start at the server level and then look at storage, and I see storage as being actually the most critical part of your virtual environment. So you really need to put the most effort in there, make sure you understand what your requirements are, what all the options are out there for determining storage. Don't do it quick. Spend some time doing your homework in that. And, ultimately, if you spend the amount of time, making sure that you're getting whatever you're getting for your virtual environment is right and is going to meet your needs and demands, then you definitely are laying the foundation for your virtual environment. And that really should drive, your success with virtualization.
Okay. That's a great way to wrap things up. This is Brian Eastwood, site editor for SearchHealthIT.com, and thanks again, Eric Siebert, for joining us today.
Sure thing.
Thank you for listening to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast. For more information and resources about healthcare technology and electronic health records, please visit SearchHealthIT.com. Thank you.